All right, second episode with Cousin Jay. What's good?
What up, man? How you doing?
I can't complain. I know you've had a rough few days with the NFL draft, and we're going to get into that. But there's a couple things I want to touch on here before we go through that. One, you know, I know you probably pay a little more attention to politics and the world news. You know. And just for what you do and stuff like that. But I've always steered clear of, one, the news and really politics.
Mm-hmm.
I always found it cringy when you turn on ESPN or Fox Sports. At this point, sometimes it's a joke, but where you see like Skip Bayless or Stephen A, they take a hard stand on a subject. Trey Young's going to be a bust, right? Or whatever the subject is. And then when they are proven wrong, you know, they still have an agenda of trying to take that hard stand, right? And you're like, dude, just admit you're wrong, right? Like, just admit. Like, you know, it almost becomes laughable. But I didn't realize that when it comes to politics in the news, it's on a whole nother level. And between Fox and NBC, like, it's just night and day. It's just ridiculous.
It's crazy the level of the lie that they'll do. It's got to the point now where we can't even use video recorded evidence against people and as a fact, right? Like, you'd be like, well, you said this, and then they could be like, no, I never said that. Okay, I have a video of you saying it. Like, well, how do I know that's me? Okay, I have audio of you saying it. No, how do you know that's me? They'll just gloss over it, and it's just, It was always kind of bad, I think, but it's not nearly at the level that it is now. And it's a lot of it just has to do with the level of like fandom that is going on with in terms of politics.
And I'll say this, like, I was shout out my guy Major Powers. We were arguing over Kaepernick a few months ago, I think, when his workout, I think, it happened. I don't know. It was a subject. And I had sent him a FS1 take. I think it was Whitlock or somebody. And he goes, you realize you just sent me a Fox Sports take on this. And I was like, so what? You know, like, what do you mean? You know, like, what do you mean? And now I'm realizing, like, dude, these people have no shame. And I'm not even knocking either side, because to be frank with you, right now, Fox News is a lot more positive, right? Because they're trying to, like, justify and spin everything that Trump does in a positive light. And so it's more positive. You go to NBC and they're like, no, Trump has just shit himself live on the White House steps. And you're like, oh, damn. But like, just the contrast of how these two networks can spin the same news story is just alarming, man. It's crazy to see, man. It's like, I almost feel like my ignorance was bliss. But you know, anyway, let's get out of that. I just thought that was crazy. Before we get into the NFL talk, Draymond went on a press tour and just kind of sounded off this week, man. And he had me kind of nervous, man, because it's like, oh no, like what, like say less. Like, oh, yeah. What's he going to say here? Now, it started off, I don't even know what the first podcast was with Maverick Carter. Did you see Maverick Carter taking shots at Steph in his defense?
Oh, that was one of the moments in the video I was going to ask you about, because this dude basically said he could take Steph to the hole. And the crazy part about it to me, though, was like, Dre didn't even say anything.
I know. And we know Draymond is kind of Team LeBron because he's with Clutch, right? He's with Clutch Sports. So yeah, he's kind of a company man. But look, man, I really wish Steph would clap back at some of the haters. I know he was asked about it, and he goes, those that know basketball, you know, he did. And that's in part why we love him, right? He always takes the high road. But at a certain point,
go get the strap,
you know. And Maverick Carter, he reminds me of the type, you know, like the kid in school who he was always around. Like, you turn around and he's like on your shoulder, you know, like you're like, everybody huddle up at lunchtime or whenever. And he's always like around and you're like, what are you doing? And he's always, I can do that too. Me too. Like, then it's like, oh man, shit. I know he's a successful dude, but you want to talk about an annoying personality.
All in the video, all on the record.
Man, yeah, he's, I mean, I don't want to knock his success, but I mean, the dude, he rode like probably like the strongest coattails on earth. You know, like how he's in the game specifically because he grew up a couple houses away from LeBron James. Like that's like, you know, that's his number one key to his success.
And have some humility about it. He just gives me the vibe. I know exactly what type of person he is, like super braggadocious. He just has an inflated sense of his abilities. You can just tell, you know what I'm saying? And hence the Steph comments. And look, he's not like completely wrong. Like we know Steph's not known as a defender. But I just wish Steph at some point, because I'm so tired of Dub Nation being like Kevin Durant sensitive when it comes to Steph Curry. Like anybody says something about him and everybody's there to defend him. So I just wish he'd clap back himself a little bit. But I didn't even give that whole thing a listen. I just saw the sound bites of that. Was there anything else from that one that you took?
Well, then there was obviously the KD comments. Like I kind of like, I was listening to it when Dre was talking about like the elephant in the room and like the last dance. And he was saying like, well, Kevin should have said something. And to me, I disagreed with Draymond a little bit. I mean, like whether he knew or not, like that's a topic we could go into, like whether he had already made his decision. And I feel like he already made his decision, but I don't think we actually know that. And then like, for me, I don't think it was on KD to say whether he was going to go or not. Like, it's just, that's just not how it works in the world. Like, if I'm at a job and I'm thinking of taking another job because I think it's better or it pays more money or whatever, I don't think it's on me to tell my employer, like, if I'm going to take a better job until I take it. I don't have to tell you beforehand. So, I just don't agree with the stance that he took.
I hear you. No, and he made the valid point that by him not answering it, it made everybody else have to talk about it more. But that's not to say that if he said this was it, wouldn't they just ask about it every time too? Wouldn't they just be like, well, considering this may be your last time in a Warriors uniform on ESPN on Tuesday night at 4:30, you know, like, you know how they just, they'll just, so yeah. I don't know. It would have been magnified in that sense too. It's hard to say, but. Yeah, I think that the consensus is that a lot of people are like, yeah, you couldn't really say it. You couldn't. And maybe it's easier for Draymond to say watching The Last Dance, you know, and kind of seeing how, because Phil Jackson really like alchemized and embraced that. When Krause told him this is it, you know, and you could see the writing on the wall, Pippen and everything, it was more clear cut. And so they used it to their advantage. And maybe Draymond seeing that kind of felt like, well, we could have really used it to our advantage if we knew this was it, and it would have just cleared the air. I think it would have helped Draymond personally. I don't know if it would have necessarily helped the entire team.
Yeah, and then I think there's like the other effect of it was all of their last dance in for the Bulls. Like, you know, like Phil was going to be gone. Scotty was going to be gone. Like Jordan was probably going to be gone. So like it was all of them galvanized into the same thing. Whereas this would have just put like Kevin on the outside, like, okay, I'm leaving because I don't want to be with you guys, kind of a thing. And I don't think it wouldn't have worked as well. You know, like it would have just been like telling your chick, like, oh, we're going to break up. Let me live with you for the next 2 months, though. You know, like that's not going to fly, you know, like it just,
like, you know, like. No, you're right. You're right, man. You're right. And so he went and did that little pod. I saw it on Instagram Live. And then he went and did the big boy shit, all the smoke, Showtime, Matt Barnes and Stack Jack. And I had just done a We Believe breakdown on my Patreon. It was game four of that Mavericks series. It was really the turning. That was the turning point in the series. It was 2-1 Warriors, and then it went 3-1. And so I'm watching Stack Jack and some of his tendencies, man. And he was kind of like an old-ass Kawhi. His game is over dribble, bap, 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 robotic, mid-range pulley. But anyway, Stack Jack is ignorant as fuck, man. Right? Like, he ignorant as hell, boy. Like, I get it. He's fun. You know, some of the shit is funny. But, boy, I didn't know in 2020 it was still cool to act like hella ignorant.
Yeah. Yeah. he hit Matt Barnes with that, like, man, you just used a big-ass word on me.
Shout out to Matt, though, because he's really carrying the show, right? Like, Matt's pretty good at it. It's entertaining because what it is the players feel comfortable talking to him and they get very candid, right? And so that's what Stack's appeal is, right? He will say some funny shit. And I think that he puts their guard down of the players they interview because, you know, he's hood and he just be talking, you know, talking like they on a couch. But yeah, Stack Jack, when I listen to some of the shit he says, I'm like, damn, you are like dead wrong. Like when you were just like absolutely wrong about that. But when it started off, to be honest, like I was a little nervous again that Draymond was going to like just spray the block and just be like, you know what? Like because again of the environment, because he was with not there physically, but because he was talking to Barnes and Stack, I thought he might just get too real. You know, he cleaned it up as it went on. But at the beginning, he was coming off real cocky. And I was like, yo, man, I'm so glad Steph and Clay are as humble as they are because you can see how the three mesh, right? Like Draymond, all the humility that Steph and Clay show, like Draymond makes up for it.
Yeah. No, I could definitely see. I definitely see what you're saying. Yeah, he doesn't. That's the thing where he's like, he obviously Draymond's real good, but then he said some wild stuff on there, like. Then I was like, you really think that? You know, like it was like, he was talking about like, oh, this season was hard, but because everybody wanted me to do this, I could go out there and try and score 25 points a game. I'm like, for real? Like, you think that you could just go out there and score 25 points a game? Like, you think that's in your bag, right?
Right. There's a level of bravado, right? There's a level of bravado and boastering with Draymond, but it's needed almost when you compare it with Steph and Clay. We need that contrast, right? But he cleaned it up real quick because he said, remember when he said, you know, I changed the game of basketball, and then he rephrased it really quick and he goes, Steph changed the game of basketball and I helped him do that. And then he went back and said, and I changed the game of basketball and Steph helped me do that, right? But he kind of rephrased it. And look, he's not wrong, man. People, the haters that are going to say, well, you're just attached to the Splash Brothers, right place, right time. And there is an aspect to that, and I think he gets it. That's the difference with some of these like brash talking bravado dudes is Draymond understands that it's in part a facade, and you can see by his actions suggest that when he talks about taking the pay cut and winning and actually when it's like he understands that there's a level to it. But where he changed the game is he turned, remember the phrase tweener? Oh, he's a tweener. He's a tweener coming out. And I just got done, you know, again, doing these classic breakdowns. I did the Antoine Jameson one a couple weeks ago, right? 51 Kobe.
Yeah.
And remember, Antoine was the classic tweener. He wasn't quite big enough to be a power forward, but he wasn't a small forward. He was a tweener. And it used to be a stigma. And Draymond changed the game in the sense of he made this phrase tweener into a hybrid. Now he's just a hybrid wing. He's a positionless forward. And so that's where I think he deserves that credit. Now, would it have happened in a different situation on a different team? No, that's, you can do that with every great athlete, really. Like if Mahomes was drafted by the Dolphins, you know, I don't know what we're talking about right now. And so he does deserve that credit and the bolstering and the bragging, and it comes off, but it's just good cop, bad cop. And that contrast within the locker room, it wouldn't have been the same if he wasn't like that.
Yeah. But yeah, also to jump on that point, like about being the tweener, like, I mean, it's not just him, but he made it now. Before, like, people would be like, oh, you don't have a power forward. Like, how are you going to assemble the starting five? Where now it's kind of like, I just need to get the best five guys out there on the floor and they'll guard who they have to guard, you know, because it's not like, you know, oh, you're the point guard. Oh, Steph can only guard Dame because, you know, they're both point guards, you know? So like, it kind of like, I think it changed that mindset for most casual fans, of course, but then like, even for some coaches who are just stuck in that old thinking of like, okay, I need to have my power forward on my power forward, you know? Like it was just, that was the way, like the mentality of how it was. And then Draymond kind of was just guarding anything and everyone. And then now like we got PJ Tucker at the five, you know?
You're right. He is, if you want to point to one player, and obviously it was also the coaching staff's decision and, you know, Kerr, give him credit and stuff like that, Ron Adams. But he was the root of the switch everything defense, right? He's what enabled he and Iguodala, I believe. Like without those two playing on the 15 Warriors team in this run, the switchable thing wouldn't have come together at that time. Who's to say when and if it would have, you know, after that? But you're right, man. You're right. And now Draymond is like an archetype, right? And I think it's cool. It's funny how you talk, you know, Mark Jackson was roasted for the comments of Steph Curry's ruining the game, right? You go in and you know I hate Mark Jackson, but I know exactly what he was saying because I'm around the youth playing basketball and I get it. Kids are launching 30-footers and they don't even have their own balance. They can't even shoot a balanced jump shot. But Draymond has created like the opposite archetype, right? Where it's like, okay, if you're big enough and you play really hard and you're smart and you like do all the other things, there's a spot for you on a winning team. You know, so that's dope. That's dope. And he should be proud of that. That being said, look, man, the shooting is unacceptable. And people have been at me a little bit like, yo, why are you always throwing Draymond in the trade talks? You know, like I had put the little snippet of last week's episode of Rudy for Draymond, right? Why are you always so quick to throw Draymond in the trade talks? Well, one, it's pretty simple. You've got three stars. Draymond's always going to be the odd one out. What are you trading one of the Splash Brothers? So, like, there's that off top. But then the other aspect of it is my concern of the way he's going to age out and the fact that he hasn't been able to fix his shot.
Like, that's the thing. Well, they always say that like, the last skill to leave you is shooting, right? So, like, if for him, he never had it, then what's, you know, like, if
how
he
is loses it the first shit that left him?
Lateral.
You say it's the last thing to leave you. That his shooting was the first thing to leave that nigga, man. That shit is wild. But the thing that a big detail was that he revealed, because remember it was his mom when he went through the shooting woes. So 15, he was shooting it all right. 16 was that like 39% Luke Walton year. Right. And then it just dipped. If it was a graph, that shit just plunged. And now he's at like 26% nuts, man. But anyway, I remember it was his mom that was trying to defend him about his shoulder. I think he had had like a minor shoulder surgery between seasons and he had a shoulder problem. And it was like, okay, it's the shoulder. But during this interview, he revealed that he had had a hip problem. Like the year right around when we got Durant, his hip had been bothering him. So I think it possibly was, yeah, I don't know if he exactly clarified it, but it was around, let's say around 16, 17. His hip was bothering him, and he said after the finals, he was like, damn, man, I'm glad we finished them out. He said it was after he swept Cleveland. So I'm assuming it was the first year they had Durant. He goes, damn, I'm glad we took care of business because I don't know if I could have played. And then so he had like a minor scoping or something of his hip, and that was kind of his excuse to why he was like, I had to readjust like how I was using my hips and my shot and all that. And those that watch my breakdowns know I've always pointed out with Draymond his dip. People make fun of the backpack shot, right? His backpack shot. But it's his dip that's inconsistent and it's just not fluid. It's a violent dip and it's not consistent. And then he lacks hip extension at the end. That's why, hence the backpack joke, is because his hips don't fully extend up and his torso doesn't get straight. Right, you look at the textbook shot of like a Klay Thompson, chest is very straight. You eventually get to like a fully erect position. Pause. And Draymond, so that makes sense that it's a hip problem. But that being said, that was like 2017, bro. He's had time to adjust to his new hip, if you will, his new dip.
Yeah, but I mean, to be honest, it's not like before 2017, he was like, you know, a lights out shooter or anything like that. I don't want to sit here and say he doesn't work on it. He doesn't try it. But I mean, I just don't understand if this is your job and you can't put up 1,000 jumpers a day, like how do you not become average at it? Like you can just become average at shooting the ball.
It's so frustrating to me. I've gone on my rants about this before because he only needs to shoot it in like two spots, the top and the corner. You got too many spots you got to practice. And it goes back to that Draymond is a competitor, right? That's his superpower, is his competitiveness, right? And so mm-hmm. he's not a gym rat. He's not going to go in there and put up 1,000 shots because it's not good enough competition for him. He needs to be out there diving on loose balls and competing against someone physically. Now, you could bring somebody else in there and have him compete in the shooting, but for whatever reason, I just don't think it gets his juices flowing.
The thing is, maybe he doesn't want to do that competition, because imagine if he's trying to do that competition and he's got to play Clay and Steph, you know, imagine you'll just lose every single time. That'll demoralize you, I think.
right. I remember watching a shooting line of Team USA. So it was like all the forwards were like on the elbow, like taking jumpers, right, in a line. And it was like him, Melo, Paul George, and Durant. and you could just see his body language, like after he would release the shot, like, come on, come on, come on. And meanwhile, these other fools are just looking like a video game, like, I'm not saying he should be a knockdown guy, but you would think, you know, like watching like Jason Kidd is the example I always use of a guy that became knocked down enough at spots. He found spots where he could knock him down. And it's just like, if he can't get to that 35-33% even, as he ages, it just makes me wary of, like, you know, again, how he's going to age. I guess the other, you know, the next topic on this All the Smoke podcast, if those of you listening that haven't listened, it's a must listen if you're a Warriors fan, really just a basketball fan, is, it's funny, man, because I released a YouTube video about a month ago, why Chris Paul hates Steph Curry. Okay. And it was clickbait. I'm not hate, like, that's where people fail to realize, like, no, I don't think he hates Steph Curry, but he's salty.
I mean, he took his mantle, right? So he's. I mean, and anybody, like, even when, like, you know, like, you have a record and it's going to be broken by somebody, everybody says the right thing. They're like, oh, you know, like, I want them to break my record, da 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 da. But you know how they're feeling inside, and I think that's what happened to Chris Paul. He was supposed to be that chosen point guard one, and then Steph came along and just snatched it from him, you know.
Right. That's why it's funny you say that too, because that's why I fuck with Reggie Miller so hard, because I don't know if you caught it, but he basically, they're asking him about The Last Dance, and he's like, man, I really didn't even want to talk about Michael. And if we sat down to eat dinner, I'd try to punch him. Like, I don't fuck with Michael. And I keep, I like that, man. Like, keep it a buck, Reggie. You know what I'm saying? That's why I fuck with Reggie. But so one, people started posting all over that Curry, Chris Paul video. No, they did it. They were on Instagram Live. They're friends. And it's like, come on, man. The context is we're in a pandemic. And Chris Paul, I think, is trying to repair his reputation around the league as just kind of being a fucking asshole. And so, no, they don't hate each other. But if you followed along, it's clear Chris Paul feels a type of way about the Warriors and Steph Curry, man. He called Kyle Lowry before the finals and tried to give them inside information, like, this is what you got to do. You guys got to win.
I think he's just he's a smart guy. He's just like, he knows he's marketing. He wants to stay a State Farm, you know, agent or whatever he's doing. You know, like, he knows he needs to do that to stay Chris Paul, the international spokesman, you know. So that's part of his game too. You know, that's why I think he was doing that with Steph Curry. I don't think he's somehow, like, you know, like, he's in town, he's going to kind of go grab drinks with the Currys or anything like that, you know?
Exactly. People, it's just funny, the internet, well, oh, no, they're boys. Like, come on, man. You know, like, we all know people, like, one, it's not hate, but we all know, we all have to smile and pretend to like people in day-to-day life. Like, oh, hey, yeah, how you doing, right? Like, there's that infamous gif where Steve Kerr is, like, joking with Chris Paul, and he smiles and immediately turns around and frowns like, this motherfucker. Like, you know, but just proof point. But anyway, what I was getting at was Draymond explained, because Matt Barnes was on those Clipper teams when the Warriors were becoming the Warriors. And it was dope to hear Draymond's insight on, he was like, Steph always thought, because they had this relationship being from North Carolina, that, you know, Chris Paul was big bro and Chris was cool. And Draymond was like, yo, I didn't really see it like that. Like Steph thought they were cool. He was like, but you could tell Chris really didn't fuck with him. And Chris was using that big brother to kind of keep him at bay. You know what I mean? He was secretly, mm-hmm. like, trying to hold Steph down. And Draymond purposefully tried to ignite that rivalry, understanding Steph needed to get over that little bro syndrome to surpass him. So that was deep. That was deep and dope psychologically from Draymond, because that's how I read it as well. I always read that Chris Paul didn't really like Steph. It was just phony. It just came off as phony, and I saw it progress to where it was just transparent hate. But then the ironic thing was, is after he explained him doing that, it kind of seemed like LeBron is doing the same thing with Draymond currently.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that, but I mean, to me, they're not, you know, on the same level. So I don't know. I mean, I guess, like, does he think like, oh, if I beat him, then like I've beaten him?
No, you're right. They're not on the same level. You're right. And Draymond, he was like, look, LeBron and I know, because he started to talk about their relationship. And he was like, look, he knows once we get on the court, I'm going to try and rip his face off. And we know Draymond isn't going to go easy. But there is an element, I think, that LeBron took from the Jordan playbook. Keep your friends close and your enemies closer, right? And Draymond is a guy that he has to match up with time and time again in the playoffs. And you don't think it helps a little bit that he's team clutch and they have a personal relationship? There's just not that same. Draymond can claim it's that same competitive edge, but you lose it once you establish a true friendship. And that's what Giannis understands. Remember that Giannis doesn't want to work out with any other stars in the league because he doesn't want to become friends with them. He knows that will weaken his competitive drive against them. And I think there's a little element. You're right. They're not the same. It's not the same Chris Paul, Steph Curry thing, but there's an element of LeBron taking Draymond under his wing, Team Nike, Team Clutch, that's kind of diffusing his venom towards him when they play.
No, I totally see that point. Yeah. I mean, like it's much easier to stomp on somebody's neck if you don't know them than like if you're their friend. Obviously, like, you can't just like, you know, like you got to be cold blooded for that. And then like, so I do see the difference between the two, like, and you're able to rise up a lot easier and do what's necessary. Like, if even in a pickup game, if you're playing against a dude you don't know and like they're like balling out on you, then you're able to, you know, go much deeper and maybe bump them a little harder for the rebound or something like that. Then if it's your boy, you're not like trying to knock him over and trying to be like an asshole out there, you know?
Right. I think there's like a limit where it swings the other way, right? Like if you're so close that you're brothers, then it makes you better. Right. Like if you get so close that you're like considered brothers, right, then all of a sudden you compete harder. But there's that in between space where you're just friends, where it's not as competitive. And so Draymond. But, that was interesting. And then. OK, so I guess the heart of it, I think the headline of the interview was the fact that Draymond revealed that it was after the first championship, his agent was BJ Armstrong. They were already planning for KD at that point. So after the 15 championship, they knew Durant was up the year after, and Draymond was negotiating his first max deal, and he took 82, I guess, instead. The max was 96, he took 82. And in the discussion, within the discussion with he and his agent, was like, if you take this, then y'all could get KD. And that was long, mind you, before the 3-1 loss.
Yeah. You know, that's before that's before they came back 3-1 on KD. And like, if they lose that series to the Thunder, is it as easy for Kevin to leave? So that was like, it's just like way forward thinking, right? It's like even before like any of the like the big steps happened, that he was thinking it. And I mean, it's pretty. That's a sizable amount of money, you know. So to take that was pretty eye opening.
And I think it shows, like I said, the kind of facade of Draymond's bolstering and cockiness and, you know, all that is. He understood, ultimately, look at his actions. He understands he's like a piece of this bigger part, of this bigger scheme, right? And he wanted to get better with it. But I think that what's telling about that is, I think we've heard like KD, remember he took a little less to retain Iguodala and Livingston after year one and all this stuff. And there was all these stories kind of made about KD sacrificing to stay with the Warriors and be a part of the Warriors. When in reality, like, the Warriors, a lot of the Warriors, not obviously Steph, sacrificed the most in, you know, Under Armour versus Nike. But Draymond sacrificed a lot of money too. And Draymond, I've pointed out that when his shooting went downhill as well, I thought in part it was because Durant, he lost all confidence in his shot because he was like, well, if Steph's not shooting it, Klay's not shooting it, KD's got to shoot it. I can't shoot it. It put another block in his mental to shoot. But the point is Draymond sacrificed for KD to come as well. And ultimately, I don't think KD acknowledged any of the sacrificing of the original core. KD's attitude kind of seemed like, y'all should be happy I'm here. Y'all should be like, great, be grateful. You know what I mean? That's kind of the vibe I'm picking up. And another thing that I thought was really interesting was he would say him and Andre would be the guys that would be like, all right, we got to get K a shot. We got to get KD a shot. Like Steph and Klay have been going off and, you know, and sometimes scores are going to get tunnel vision and whatnot. And he goes, and so sometimes we'd call a play for him and he'd get mad. And he'd be like, don't fucking call a play for me. Don't call a play for me. I don't need that shit. But at the same time, he wanted the ball, right? And
yeah,
you know what that is Durant wanted them to yield to him naturally, right? They didn't. It doesn't mean the same when it's ordered, when it's obligated, when it's like, hey, Steph, Klay, spread out, give K the ball, ISO at the high elbow, right? It doesn't mean the same as if we're the team. We're like, nah, it's KD, it's your team, and it naturally happened. And I think that's what pissed Durant off about it.
Yeah, I mean, he's the underneath the layers kind of guy. You know, he doesn't say things overtly. He doesn't do things overtly. He's gotten like that LeBron school of like passive aggressive kind of behavior, like hiding behind fake Twitter names and stuff like that. So just like having the teacher say like, oh, be friends with KD was never going to appeal to him. You know, he needed to be sometimes, you know, when somebody steps on the court, you just look over and you're like, oh, he's the best dude on the court. Like, I know it. Like, we know it. We all know it. We just got to like kind of like get around him so we'll win this game. And he wanted that to happen naturally rather than like the coach showing up and saying like, we have this new player. He's our best player. So everybody give him the ball. You know, like he didn't want it to go down like that.
Right, right. It was the fact that he couldn't believe that they would forget to get him touches. Never mind, okay, we'll make up and give you the touches. He's like, wait a minute. Y'all haven't given me a touch in 8 possessions? Like, the fact that this happened is enraged. You know, that's just how I took it. But let me ask you this, though. Is it, in a way, is the same character trait that allowed us to get him the same one that made him leave? You know, like, and I'm not saying he wouldn't have left OKC, but it seems like he, you know, with these rabbit ears and he seems like the people around him can influence him so strongly that it was only natural. Like, that's how he was coached into coming here after losing 3-1. And then now with Rich Kleiman and Kyrie, right? It's the same thing that we're able to get him is the same reason he left in a way.
Well, I think what you've said this before on like other recordings and everything like that, like, I think it was more of the fact that he didn't gel with these guys. Like you said that they were already friends and they have families and stuff like that. And he's still trying to like, you know, go out, have fun, play video games with people and stuff like that. And then they were not in that mode. For me, that was the biggest thing that made him leave. Like he just, it wasn't as fun to him. It wasn't like a clubhouse, you know, it was just like to a lot of these guys, this was a job and then they were friends with each other, but they had their separate lives at home. And I think you've talked about them before multiple times.
I think also in listening to the Draymond, if you read between the lines, it kind of seemed as if KD had been behind closed doors, kind of like trying to hold Draymond and the Warriors hostage. Like it sounded like behind closed doors, he was going to Draymond and be like, I'm fucking going to leave, man. Like this is fucking, I'm fucking out of here with this boat. He kind of alluded to that, but that's what it seemed like. He was kind of, and basically it sounds like Draymond could have pulled his whole card during that interview and he didn't. He just kind of sprinkled it in there and tried to keep it real while defending himself. Cause like the point of that, like, and I love that. That was probably my favorite part was when he said, look, don't blame me for leaving. Don't make it on me, because he was like, and this is, again, him being grounded in reality and in the bravado of understanding, like, if If KD wanted Draymond out, Draymond was out, right? And
yeah.
And I remember saying that with fans arguing after the argument on the bench and all that, and people were being like, no, like you trade Durant, you get rid of Durant, and you like you got to keep Draymond. And it was like, no, that's not even a conversation. Like Myers and Lacob, like if that was the debate, like no, Draymond out, and Draymond knows it.
I mean, KD, you could argue is a top, what if you want to say 20 player ever? Yeah, I mean, most people might have him higher than 10. That. And you're going to trade him?
Yeah, it needed to be said, because it was like, he was like, don't make it about me, because KD, a couple of weeks, months back, had gone out and said, yeah, man, that incident really did fucking like clarify things for me. You know, and now you get Draymond's side of it and you know, again, reading between the lines, it's like, nah, that incident, bro, it was, the wheels were in motion long before that incident. Like that was the tipping point. Like don't make it sound like that was the start of it, because it wasn't. Is what I gathered from it. All right, man. So, are you ready to go into this draft?
The pain of watching that thing go down was
the overall. What would I call it? Broadcast of it, I thought was cool, except for Goodell. I don't think anybody wanted to see Goodell up there. He was a vibe killer. There was this moment in the beginning, it made me feel uncomfortable. He was like, I know this feels different for you, and it feels different for me. And I was just like, bro, this is uncomfortable, my nigga. Like, let's just get to the draft. But,
yeah. This is the thing, like, I don't get about a lot of these, like these opening speeches, or even like, you know, like you get like a bunch of emails from, you know, like CEOs of random companies, like, well, during this crisis, this is what we're going to do. Like, I just don't get, like, nobody cares what you have to say about this incident. You know, like I'll listen to a doctor, or I'll listen to somebody at the like CDC. Why do I care what a cookie company CEO is thinking or has a vibe about COVID, you know? Like, it just doesn't make any sense. Like, so for him to like start into that diatribe, it's like, yeah, we're thinking about everybody too. Like, I don't need you to say it, you know?
Yeah, we want an escape from it. It doesn't need to be constantly reminded. And you're right. The emails, really what it is, it's a really a greedy, underlining greedy thing, because it's like, hey, don't forget about us and our company. We care too. Maybe purchase something from us. Like, fuck out of here. But then there was a kid. What was dope was there was a kid, Fletcher, who was battling cancer and he was a Browns fan, and they cut to him and he got to like announce something and do something. That was dope. That was inspiring. That was empowering. Yeah. Like, lead with more of that. We don't need to see Goodell with, you know, something up his keister, just super. It was, but anyway, so I thought that was dope. But you know, like to me, ultimately, like in the draft, I had this analogy of like that when you go into it, all right, what are these teams gonna do? Are you one of those people who, when you go shopping, you go to Walmart, you go to the mall, like, are you gonna buy something just because it's on sale, or are you gonna end up getting what you came for? Right, find the best deal on what you came for, or do you just buy something randomly, frivolously because it was on clearance? And like, those are like the two different types of mindsets, it seems like, going into these drafts. The other thing I noticed was everybody was making a big thing about CeeDee Lamb snatching the phone from his broad. But what I noticed was a lot of like the first 10 picks, these dudes' houses looked way too nice for what they were at this point.
Yeah. So that's, somebody was like, oh man. He was like, they're like, how are these houses so nice? And I was joking, like, dude, like, I mean, college football ain't free, you know, like these dudes, the Wonderlic, like Jerry Jeudy's Wonderlic was like a 9, and 10 is supposed to be literacy. And then like, you think these dudes are like, hey, let me get the best education possible. Like, nah, dude, they're you know, somebody's cutting a check somewhere. And that's how, you know, that's how they're in those houses. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, they, you could tell like the top, and I guess I've watched enough behind the draft scene stuff where, you know, if you're a projected lottery pick, let's just call it, banks will loan you. They're already like loaning you mills. And so, you know, but you could tell like a lot of these families, like the walls were freshly painted and shit. And it was like they had this set up. But, you know, that's what I love so much was then you look over at the Raiders and Ruggs is in like a Section 8 apartment with like dingy blinds and shit. That was, he ready for this shit. He was ready for war, baby. Like, you know what I'm saying? But I thought it produced more organic moments because, you know, like you're at the, you're in New, where they usually do it in like in the Meadowlands or wherever. And, you know, you're at these, everybody's trying to act proper at these tables and stuff. And at home, you just got more organic, natural emotion. So I thought it was kind of dope.
And at home, it's like, it's all the people that you want around you who are going to give you the, like, those, like, that genuine reaction. Whereas, like, you're limited in New York. Like, you can only have, like, what, like, five people at the table. So, like, yeah, it's going to be your mom and dad, and they're going to be happy for you. But it's always going to be, like, that one homie who's, like, so juiced for you. He's going to get up and, like, give you a bear hug or, like, you know, I don't know. It's just, it feels more, or like a cousin or like, you know, a family member who's like, yeah, you know, like, you know, it just, it feels like it was going to create something more authentic overall, just based on like the amount of people and like how the comfortableness of the setup, like you said.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting to see everybody's different setups, and you could tell like a lot of the coaches were just like totally not technically savvy or whatever. It was just set up for them and watching. And we're gonna get to your Raiders. Like, I was watching Gruden and Mayock. Gruden, like, Gruden's oldest son there, like, for sure has retard strength. Like, did you see? He was like just like super pacing. And it was cool though to see everybody excited with that. I just liked it, man. I know I was gonna take my shots and stuff, but
yeah, man. Did you see what's his name, Vrabel? The Tennessee's coach. I don't know what the hell. Why did he even think it was funny to have his like some dude in a spandex outfit just chilling there? Was that his son? I don't even know who it was. Like, but it was just out of control. What the fuck? Like, what the fuck are you thinking?
Right. And then Kinsbury with I thought he was gonna have like some sort of Pornhub chick come strolling in. Right. That was like, I was waiting for like the Brazilian maid to come trotting in there with that. But yeah, it was different, man. And it was, you know.
And did you see Jerry Jones flexing? This dude was having, what was it, like, he would have people like, he would look at the phone and be like, oh, can you do that for me? Like, you can't pick this shit up.
That was real too, right? Like, that was, it felt like, yeah, it wasn't even like staged. This was like everyday life for Jerry.
Yeah, yeah. He's just like, oh, the draft happened to be here. Like, I'm in Saint-Tropez. Let me like pull over real quick to like get on this, you know, like.
All right. So we a week or two ago, whenever we cut that last, we both were high on Ruggs, and y'all got Ruggs. Yeah. You can't be too mad. You got Ruggs.
That pick, I was like, I was like, okay, you know, that's what I wanted. Like, I thought CD was the safer pick, but I did think, you know, that he got that Ruggs had the upside. So I was at that moment, I was good. I was like, okay, that's good. That's good right there. But then that 19 came around and they just had to remind me, like, they just had to like remind me what they're about, you know, like, they had to let me know, like, don't get it twisted. You know, like, we can still fuck it up. You know?
Right, right. So he's projected. Well, Damon Arnett, is that how you say his name?
Arnett.
Yeah, like, he was projected, yeah, like second or third round, right? And like, from what I've read, they really like his competitiveness, right? He's using all the football cliches, and
yeah,
you know, it just seems like Gruden makes, it's fitting, right? He kind of makes Al Davis like decisions. It seems like, where he's just like, I really like the way that boy's undercarriage smells. Oh.
Knock on wood if you're with me.
You know?
Yeah. he goes off some like, I'm like Gruden grinder. Like, and the thing is, I don't fault them necessarily for taking guys they want. You want to take Cleveland Farrell? Go ahead. You want to take Damon Arnett because you think he's the best football player? Go ahead. It's the position and the value in which they get for where they get them. Like, if you trade back, you know, like, the Niners were right after them and they traded back one pick. And so that's the part where that annoys the shit out of me about them, is that they have no understanding of value and how to get the best deal. Like, I was talking about it with somebody. I was like, say I had all the money in the world, I could go and buy a $1 million house for $2 million if I wanted to. But what would be the fucking point? Like, why do you think that's a good idea? Like, if you can get somebody around later, why wouldn't you try and acquire something and get him around later rather than just overpaying because you can? You know, it just doesn't make any sense.
Knock on wood if you're with me.
You can see within Gruden. I love Gruden. I love his personality. Are y'all going to be on Hard Knocks again? Like, that might be a mistake, but
No. I hope not.
But I love his personality. But you can see where he just goes off like emotion and like gut instinct. When you hear him talk about like the players and prospects, he doesn't really kind of say anything of function. Again, it's all like cliches. Like, he's just a football player and you know, all that stuff. And then you go for three receivers. Well, I guess the Bowden Jr., Lynn Bowden Jr., he just seems like, I did a little research and he seems like, obviously he's like a gadget player. And my question, he just seems real boom or bust, man. Real boom or bust for a third round pick.
Yeah, no, that's the thing is like, you have to, obviously first have to be like, you're trying to get a superstar or like a star, you know? And the second and third, these have to be guys that you think you're going to plug in and start at some point. You know, like, these are the type of guys you have to get to pick up a guy that you could be good at something, maybe kind of like, it just makes no sense. Like, if you hope he becomes Taysom Hill, like that's his max. Like, you can't win spending second and third round picks hoping to get Taysom Hills. You know, it just doesn't work that way.
And it just seems like that seems like the sixth and seventh round picks, right? Where you take a guy like that and it's like, and you could, there's a possibility he becomes this like great, you know, player, trick player, gadget player, whatever you want to call it. But you're right at that point. And to me, with what I understand with gadget players is if he only works in those trick type plays, then it tips the defense every time he comes on the field. And so he has to be functional within normal formations. Like, if he only comes in on these weird, funky formations, it's like, oh, I wonder what's happening here. You know, it just tips everything off. And so you have to be able to disguise him within normal formations and let him just run like a draw or like a normal screen pass. But we'll see, man. I think I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that Gruden adapts. He's been known as an offensive mind, and everybody, you know, I think he had to play catch up here. And if he mimics some of the Shanahan McVay type stuff.
We had a lot of needs, you know, like we were bad. So there's not like anything getting around it. And then like to use it on three receivers, one of which he essentially lost last year practicing as a receiver because he was the kid from Kentucky, the one we've been talking about. He played almost the whole year as a quarterback. So he lost a year as a receiver. So he's not even like a polished receiver. And he was converted when he came there anyway.
That's a red flag anyway, too. When you keep getting converted, you know?
Yeah. But then they like doubled down on it by taking a receiver the very next pick. Like, I mean,
did you hear Gruden's quote on that? Because that's where I was clowning off about the undercarriage and all that stuff. Like, he said, this is the quote, "I was like a dog trying to get back in the house, getting Mayock to pull the trigger on this. I was so excited to get Edwards. You have no idea." And he was basically clarifying to everybody, like, at least he's going to own it if the dude's a bust. Like, we know whose pick it was. But Gruden, we all knew that Mayock is somewhat of a puppet, right? Gruden's not even hiding it. Because that's where it really didn't make sense, right? That then they took another receiver with the next pick, and Gruden is like putting his name on it. He's like, I had to get Mayock to do that.
What do we have out of the Mac trade now? So we draft Cleveland Farrell early. So not to say we lost the pick, but like, we could have had anyone else. Like, if we still had Mac, would we be drafting Cleveland Farrell at 4? Probably not. And then we drafted Josh Jacobs. So he's a good player. But if you like the positional value, again, if you're drafting a first round pick running back, he's got to be like amazing, you know, like in my mind at least. And so he's good, but he's not great. And then now we have Arnett, and we had given them our number 2. So they picked a second round pick also. So at the end of everything, are we happier without Mac and the money, I guess? Or now we have Josh Jacobs and Arnett, who we don't know is going to be yet, but he's not graded to be a star. And like, that was the end result of the trade in my mind. And to me, it's not worth it.
Yeah. Yeah. The way they tried to like justify it too was how cash poor they were, and then they couldn't really sign him is what some people were explaining. But no, I hear what you're saying. I think the Arnett pick is really going to determine that trade. I understand that, you know, you text me like, oh, I'm done. You know, you'll never be done. You know, this is, you've lived with the Raiders your whole life. This is, they've been like this, you know, but I was looking around the AFC West, and I don't think the AFC West had a great draft. I mean, if it's any kind of consolation prize, like the Broncos took Judy and Hamler.
Yeah. It made me think like maybe Sutton, either there's something wrong with Sutton that we don't know about, or maybe they're just not going to give him an extension.
It seems like he's trying to just go like with the Chiefs. He's just trying to match fire with fire and just have this high powered offense. But you look at how young they are, and then taking those two receivers again with Locke, it could just be a shit show. Like the Broncos could, we could look back and they could end up having like the worst draft. And then you look at the Chargers with Herbert, and that's when my analogy in the beginning, it seems like they just went in too much of the mindset of like, we need a quarterback, so we're taking a quarterback. And everything I've heard about Herbert is like, he hasn't gotten better. He doesn't love football, like all the red flags.
They're saying he has accuracy issues. What? Who wants a quarterback with accuracy issues? I just don't get why he would ever draft a quarterback. It's like, I don't know. It's like, let me get a point guard who's like, who really struggles passing. You know, it doesn't make any sense. You know, like, I don't understand how some of these GMs have jobs. Like, I mean, a lot of these picks really don't make sense. And I feel like this is their job and they do it so poorly.
And I think what you're seeing is one, like the coaches, if you look at the coaches that have more control or power over the organization, they pull their trump cards and draft to what they like, what's fun for them. It's a sexy pick. And then also it's just the trend of, you know, they always hear copycat league in all these sports leagues. The trend of just doubling down on the offense, right? Like receivers and running backs. It seems like they're having a resurgence.
But also, I wanted to ask you, how do you feel about the Niners draft?
So, Ayuk looks the part, right? Kinlaw looks like he needs a custom toilet. I mean, no, that's a big boy, man. That's a
there's
big
no,
boy.
There's not going to be. There's never going to be any PPMs for him, right?
Yeah, no PPOs. Yeah, no, that boy.
PPOs, sir.
But I mean, he just, you know, both the Niner pick, the two first rounders, they look the part. And you know, I was to my wife, and she's like, what do you mean? Don't all the players? No, you know, like some players just specifically, when you look at the film, you're like, oh, that fool looks just, you know, they just look the part. And so I thought that it was, you know, I'm not going to front and act like I had Ayuk, like I was targeting him a whole lot. I was aware of him, but I thought we were looking at, you know, the big three at Ruggs, CD, and Judy. And so once they took Kinlaw, which, you know, it's not as fun, it's not as sexy a pick, but you look at him and I'll start with Kinlaw. Like apparently he's probably the best interior pass rusher in the draft, or it's arguable with the kid that was taken before him, right?
Him or Brown.
Right. And I think that is specifically really important when you look at the game today and how athletic the quarterbacks are. Like you see it all the time where it's like you have an elite edge rusher, but they can just get away from them. And so to flush them out, to break the integrity of the pocket, if you will, with these guys, the inside pass rushers, I think that's a very valuable asset to have. He seems like a really safe pick. Again, it's not super sexy, but it seems like he's going to come in day one and eat big time with Armstead and Bosa. And then Ayuk, I wasn't, like I said, I didn't scout him really or look at a whole bunch of them because I thought we were going to get one of the more higher ranked receivers. But the fact that they traded down or traded up to get him makes me think that he really was like a target for him.
They must have been looking at him to make that kind of move to get. But the thing is, like, I mean, and this is part of the thing that gets me is like Lynch, he's not a front office guy. He had no experience, but this guy just moves up and down the draft and he just manages it so well. And that's kind of like what also disheartens me about the, like, Mayock's supposed to be like a draft expert, right? He's like, this is his, he was like on NFL Network for years. And then like Lynch is just schooling him right and left, you know, like, so, and I don't know if it's, he's just like some sort of gunslinger, but like he's, when he identifies something, he just goes and gets it. And that, and so I'm pretty sure that he thought that that guy would be available. And then when he saw it getting kind of closer and he saw like, okay, Jefferson's gone, like is now I going to be the next one? Let me just make sure I get him. So I don't mess around, you know, like, and I think that's what you need in a GM. And that's why I'm like, I'm super jealous. I'm just really jealous.
Yeah, man. It is always funny to hear like the press releases from the teams where they're like, he was the top guy on our board. You know, every team like says that somehow, but yeah, the fact that they traded up, it kind of sells that as opposed to where it just falls. You know, you're sitting at that pick and you're like, well, he was actually the guy we wanted. It's like, oh yeah, sure. But Lynch, I think Lynch has, there's a little bit of a Bob Myers effect, right? Where it's relationships. I think Lynch has a lot of good relationships around the league, which allows him to make these moves and operate. Where Mayock or some of these other guys, they're just not on as friendly terms maybe with some of these other front offices is what I would guess. The one thing that I'm a little like, I don't feel great about is there's a little bit of like nepotism is the fact that, so it started with the Solomon Thomas pick in Stanford. And he was just like family friends with Solomon and all this stuff. And then I'm hearing that Herm Edwards is like his best friend. Herm, again, relationships. But Herm Edwards and he are really close.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And so that makes me a little wary. Like, oh, okay. Like, was like, I don't know. But that being said, like the kid looks the part, man. Kyle, you could tell when they showed Kyle during the pick, like he was, that was a genuine celebration, right? It wasn't just like a fake fist pump. He was happy to get him. There are, so obviously after we made the pick, I went and watched a bunch of footage on him and there are some OBJ like tendencies as far as like the long arms. Mm-hmm. He's really fluid. The short area burst, like he seems faster on field than like what his 40 suggests. I will say though, like, cause everybody keeps pointing like he's a yak monster. He's a, you know, the yards after the catch, all this stuff.
Yeah.
I will point out it was the Pac-12. Like, I'm not sure he's breaking a lot of those tackles in the SEC.
Yeah, but also the other thing we have to is I don't think his quarterback was that good either. So like he might even be like he might even pop more, you know, like it could be.
That's how they're acting, man. They're acting like he could. Yeah. Him and Debo, they look here's the thing with the Niners is clearly now you can tell that Kyle has a type. He has a type. And he likes bully skill players. The physical bully type guys. Look at Kittle. You look at Debo, and now this kid, Jalen Hurd, a year ago, right? And and if Hurd can come back, man, the receiving core is young. You've got these big physical guys, and then the kid that they drafted, you know, with the seventh pick. Well, I'm looking for his name here, Juan Jennings out of Tennessee, 6'3", 215, and I'm reading up on him. This kid got suspended for cleating another dude with his helmet off.
What the fuck?
And then before that, he got dismissed for the team for spazzing on social media in a tirade, a cursing tirade reportedly. And my guy Steven emailed me and he's a Tennessee fan and he was telling me a little bit about him. And the dude has like a cult following. Like he's just like a savage. He's like an old school, like just savage receiver. And so he fits the mold too. And I say all that to say like this, that receiver room now is full of wolves. Like the Niners receiver room is full of wolves. Dante Pettis is on his way out. Like I don't think Dante Pettis can hang in that room. I think, and you know, they got rid of Goodwin and his track speed.
You've seen Game of Thrones, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he's gonna end up being Reek. I mean, that's gonna. He's gonna end up being Reek in that room. You know? He's not gonna come out the same. You
know? He's just gonna stop talking, man. He's just gonna stop talking, right? Yeah. But I read an article from somebody. It was basically the "Don't Give Up on Dante Pettis" article. a couple weeks ago. Found it on Twitter, and I'm looking at all the comments, and people are like, "I'm right with you. Like, I see the talent. Like, And it's like, I don't know, man. And because he's like the polar opposite of the other guys they've drafted. And then just if you read between the lines, I don't know what he's done to Kyle Shanahan personally, but it's like they won't even let him return kicks. You know, and that was supposed to be his elite trait. And so there was something weird with Pettis. I think he's on his way out, but Kyle has established his type. He likes the physical bullies, and they've got a bunch of them now. The other big news, obviously, Joe Staley retired.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
And we go ahead and just make a
when I saw this, I can't.
Big flexing. Big flexing.
That boy has the juice.
Yeah, I feel pretty good about it, man. You got to feel pretty good as a Niner fan. And those of you on Patreon know that I did Niner breakdowns this year, and I don't claim to be, I'm just a fan. I'm an enthusiastic fan, and I watch and try to gather what I can. And Staley had lost a step, man. Like he really had, he had mm-hmm. the injury. He had the femur break, and then he like did something to his thumb. He had two injuries. So to be fair, but what I had noticed was he was getting beat at the snap, like a lot. Like it just seemed like his reflexes were going as well. His reaction time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I respect Staley. I wish he would have got a Super Bowl. He deserved that. That sucked. But I respect him for hanging it up. They said health issues or whatever, but it's like, you don't want to see a guy be like a shell of himself. And at that position, it's just, you can't get away with it. You can't get away with it at left tackle.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, the Trent thing, obviously he had the scary, like, what was that story about brain cancer? He had like brain cancer, and they just told him he had some sort of
like growth on his head, and they told him that like, oh no, it's no big deal. And then like that's what it was the Washington doctor, the team doctor, I think, that were saying that to him. And then when he got a second opinion, they found out it was cancerous, and he was like, and that's why he was so heated with Washington.
Yeah, he should have been. And he held out for the season. He's only 31. So the hope is that he's a young 31. He has one less season on him. And he's a Pro Bowl talent. But, you know, at the timing, like, again, the timing and reflexes, I think, you know, it may take some time to get back. But you have to like the move. I mean, to come in and do that right away. And then you got McGlinchey on the other side. So that was dope, man. So, yeah, I'm happy overall with the draft. You know, it's hard. It's hard to really, to me, I was looking at because it's like, whose draft did you like and whose did you not? It's much easier to point to the ones you didn't like, you know?
Yeah.
It's rather than say, oh, they for sure hit, right? But you can kind of see the ones where you're like, I don't know about that one. But the Niners, they also traded Breida to get back. They picked up a tight end, a blocking tight end. Breida, so if you hadn't watched, like, what happened with him was, he started fumbling the ball. He had like a couple really costly fumbles, and he just fell out of favor. And then the reality of it is running backs to Kyle Shanahan are like thoughts, right? Like they're just, you know, they're a dime a dozen. I mean, I would be shocked if the Niners ever drafted a running back in the Kyle Shanahan era in the top first three rounds, basically. Maybe a third rounder, right? But I just, you know, I think that he understands that it's the scheme, and he just looks for certain attributes. And Mostert, Coleman, and they still even have Jarrett McKinnon, who, my God, man, I don't know about that one.
Well, I think he took a huge pay cut, though. That's why they ended up trading Breida. I think they were saying that, like, McKinnon was like, all right, I'll take a huge pay cut. And then he was like, okay, well, then I'm just going to get rid of Breida now. And I think you guys also traded Goodwin.
Yeah, we traded Goodwin to Philadelphia. Lynch has made a lot of moves, and it's like, damn, it kind of comes together for him. It's been impressive. It's been impressive thus far. I think the biggest story of the draft, though, has to be the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah.
And what they did, right? And to me, it really is a thing of, I had read a book years and years ago called Likeability, the L Factor. The L Factor, right?
Mm-hmm.
Aaron Rodgers' likability is so low. Like, there's no way the Saints do this to Drew Brees. They just wouldn't do it to him. Because that's like a comparable thing. Because everybody had perhaps love going to New Orleans. And to me, you know what it's like? It's like if the Warriors had the first pick and they took LaMelo. Instead of helping Steph, we're going to draft the guy that's going to replace Steph. He's not really going to help him. And I'm not saying that that's what LaMelo will be, but that's kind of just the example, right? It's like, instead of getting Edwards or Wiseman or someone to help Stephen Clay, no, we're just going to draft your replacement at the back end of your prime.
Yeah. The Packers did this to Favre too. So I was like, is it like a organizational thing? But I mean, they've switched GMs since that time, obviously. But I feel like he has a couple years of his prime left. Why wouldn't you get him some help? But, you know, like they just...
Again, it's because they don't like him. I think they don't like him. Yeah, I think if he's more likable, they don't do that. But you're right. It's fair to point that the Favre was 36 at the time too. But what was hilarious is I was trying to read the quotes of Jordan Love, you know, and he was like, yeah, I got to talk to Aaron. I called him, you know, and he was really, he congratulated me. Now, can you imagine what that conversation really went like and like how the vibes are when they first get in the quarterback room? Like, I can imagine Aaron Rodgers being like cocky Ben Stiller character, you know, like where, like,
yeah.
Where he's like just hella bragging. Or something like that. He comes, he puts his feet up. He's like, oh, this is my Super Bowl trophy. And he's like wearing like all his attributes, all his accolades. Like, but he's like, not.
He's like, oh yeah. I was the 24th pick. Where were you picked again? Like, or like, oh, I went to Cal. Did you go to a Utah State?
Like, he's like, that's that throw you made right there. That is that. I like that. That reminds me when I had a hurt shoulder and I threw it like that. You know, like just like every place he can, just like undermining and like backhand complimenting him.
I give it to the Packers. Like they understand, you know, like, I mean, other than Reggie White, no one is ever going to go to sign with Green Bay. You know, like that's not going to be the destination. So maybe they have to do it that way. Like they have to get in like super early and get like when they see a guy they think is going to be good, they get them so that they have them, you know, forever.
That's a great point. I think you nailed it there. They're never going to sign a free agent quarterback, so they have to be more aggressive. That's a fair point, man. I think you nailed it. I think you nailed it. It's still funny to watch. Aaron Rodgers is easy to like, he's easy to root against, right? With his bug eyes and shit.
He lacks that one, like the one gene in the DNA sequence of like understanding like how to interact with people.
Right. And that's like the key component. Like I'll give Cap. That's the one thing, you know, I'm not a Kaepernick fan, but you know, the one key ingredient for a quarterback is that rallying gene, that likability is for a lack of a better term. Right. And he just, that's very important for a quarterback, man, or just for a leader of even like a point guard. Right. The guys have to galvanize or rally behind you. You have to be liked. And that's one thing Cap had was like, you could tell the team was like, they liked him. They fucked with him. The line wanted to protect him. And Rodgers is just severely lacking that, man. That's what you hear about Tua. I heard this story about where he showed up from Hawaii at the quarterback camp for like all the top players and all the top guys. All they had just heard about was he was this legend from Hawaii. And after like day two, everybody was just following him around. Like he just, you know, that charisma that Steph and these guys, these great leaders have. I'll leave with my positive take was I liked Miami's draft. I like Miami getting Tua and just going for it.
Yeah. They got that guard in the second round too, who's going to be really good. I mean, they kind of, their other first round picks, they kind of reached on them, but they also traded back. So like, it's not, they were working the board a little bit. So, and they're getting the guys they want. But I really liked Miami's draft. I think Baltimore did really well as well. Man, another thing we got to talk about is this draft analysis. Like, there was some dude, CeCe Lamb is going to be a great number three receiver. That was an awesome pick. Like, there was two parts to the stupidity. To think that CeCe Lamb is going to be CD. Sorry, I keep calling CeCe, but he was going to be the number three receiver on that offense. And then that it is a good idea to spend your number one pick on the number three receiver. I just don't understand where do these guys, how do they get a job?
Do you think maybe it was like the good number three receiver this season? But, you know, by all accounts, everybody likes what Dallas did. Jerry is like the chick with huge tits. And she goes to the surgeon. Yeah. She's like, give me bigger ones. You know, like he can't help himself. So it's like, I know it kind of worked out for him, but even, I feel like even if Cobb had stayed, I feel like they still take Lamb. It's just the Jerry Jones thing to do.
Yeah. But I mean, he fell to them and he's the number one receiver. So it's not like I can fault them for, you know, like I can't fault them for, or he was like the consensus number one receiver. So it's not like I can fault them really for the pick. I just know, like, you knew if it happened that way, like he wasn't going to, like, yeah, you're right. He would not have been able to hold back and like draft, you know, another a linebacker or something like that.
Yeah, he gets, and it's just like a fan. You understand it because as fans, we feel the same way, right? Like Kinlaw, and when we go back in hindsight, like Kinlaw will most likely have been a great pick for the Niners. But like, I still wanted Ruggs. Yeah. I still would have been more excited if they had said Lamb when they called, when Godell called it, right? And it's just that more exciting. But like, ultimately, like, shout out to James if he's listening. Like, football's won in the trenches. It still is. It always is going to be. And it's just not as fun to draft a right guard.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, if you think about like what the Niners did, right, they traded away, Buckner, and then they used the pick. They even traded back using the pick and they got even more value out of it. So now they have the replacement for Buckner, another draft pick, and they're paying him a shit ton less. Like, that's the way you're supposed to manage, you know, a cap and a manager team and everything like that. That's the kind of thinking you need. And the Niners just have it, just seem to be on like that warrior level of using their resources in the right way.
Yeah, man. It's exciting as a Niner fan, and there's always room, dog. I know you didn't. They're in Las Vegas anyway. Technically, you might be a little closer to San Francisco than Las Vegas.
So that was the other thing that I kind of texted you, like, man, like, this, I don't know if it was like the fact that they're leaving Vegas or anything like that. And I know this is like in the fan world, it's blasphemous. Like, I was just like, should I just leave them? You know, like, I feel like I can't do this to myself anymore, you know, like, and I started making a list. I was like, okay, like, if I'm going to leave, like, where would I go? And I kind of like, and it was like, I don't know if it was like, you know, you're broken and like, you know, you're like, I don't know what to do with myself. Like, I had actually made a list, and it was like, and then it was, so the first one was obviously the Niners. And I was like, you know, like, it's the Bay connection.
You're eyeing us. Go ahead.
I know. And then so the second one was Miami. Cause you remember, like, as a kid before, like, cause I bet back when we were kids, the Raiders weren't even in Oakland. That's why I explained
because people go, how are you a Niner fan and not a Raider fan? And I'm like, well, it's my age, bro. Like, it wasn't even a thought, right? I mean, for me, for the normal kids, but you, let me explain to the audience, you're the family member that roots against who everybody's rooting for.
Yeah. I'm a acknowledged low-key hater. Like, I'm the kind of guy who is like, when Jordan was at his peak, I was like, well, you know, Chicago could be a little better if he didn't take so many shots, you know? Like, that's the guy.
I remember your Dan Marino, what were those stuffed animals or the stuffed like figures? Oh, there was the Ultimate Warrior. They had the WWE and you had a Dan Marino one.
Wrestling buddy or something like that. It was, and I had a Miami Dolphins starter jacket, and I thought I was so sick with that dolphin on the back. Yeah, so that's what I was kind of thinking, like, oh, maybe I could go back to it. Like, and I used to really like be into the Dolphins when we were a kid, there was no Raiders at the time, and I was, you know, against the Niners. And then, like, I would cry every time they would lose to Buffalo, and they always did. And so I was thinking, like, oh, I could go to them. And then the other thing I was thinking was the Seahawks, because I was like born in Seattle. I mean, I only lived there for a year, but, and we have like a lot of family out there. So I was thinking like Seahawks, but I can't do it. Like, I've watched enough Seahawks games to know that I don't care for them.
I think all real hardcore fans contemplate this at a certain time in their fandom of like, man, I just wish I wasn't. I remember, like, when I moved out here and the Suns were popping, So the Warriors were, you know, this was before We Believe. They were just trash. And it was like a Nash, Amari, all, you know what I mean? And it was like, dang, this could be real easy, but I could, it's just not in me. And it's not even like when we used to play Madden or NBA Live, Lakers versus Celtics, all those video games. Like, I could never not be the Warriors or Niners. It didn't matter. Like, I just can't do it. It's not in me. I can't even be another team in a video game. So never mind jumping ship. But yeah, man, the Niners wagon's always open, you know, and I think you got a built-in excuse with them changing, you know, changing areas. But I'll tell you this, man, maybe this is a good thing here because I've noticed a trend with people and fans is whenever you're ready to say, this is it, I'm done, you get that that glimmer of hope and light that you need. And so watch, they're going to have a surprising year just because you're on the verge of letting them go. That's just how it works. It's just how it works. Like right when you're ready to lose all faith, like Ruggs becomes Antonio Brown and Mariota is just like something special. All of a sudden they're like scoring with the Chiefs. I'm telling you, man. So that's just how it works. So, but yeah, man, I thought this was a fun one here with the draft. I feel sad, honestly, because the NFL, I like the last 2.5-3 weeks, it's the draft's consumed me. It's filled my time. Particularly when I can't sleep of just like looking into all these players. And now that it's over, man, like there's no light at the end of the tunnel with sports returning, you know, it's the last dance. And then, I don't know. I think it's cool today in the last 48 hours, I finally have started to see like sort of some positive stuff about the pandemic and, you know, Georgia's opening up. And obviously it's remained to be seen how it's going to play out, but at least it's starting to feel like we could possibly start to be coming out of this. And then things can happen. But May 1st, I think the NBA is going to they're going to announce probably that the regular season is over. Shocker. But that was the date for Adam Silver to say, all right, well, we're going to wait till May 1st before you make any other decisions. And so things are starting to turn a little positive. It looks like if I were to guess, they're going to try to have something in one of these states that opens up as some sort of tournament or playoff. But, you know, maybe that's just me being optimistic. I appreciate you. I think we covered quite a bit here with this draft, and have you on sooner than later, man.
This is fun, man. I'm really enjoying it. Thanks for having me on, man.
All right, cuz.
All right, man.